you may have heard about snow piling up in the Upper Peninsula, but a picture showed up on my Facebook page this morning showing 6 inches of snow in New Buffalo. Off to the south, not Buffalo, New Buffalo, off to the southwest of us. One commenter says lake effect doesn't count. I'm not sure I agree with that. In November, in fact, it may even count for more. Welcome back to Current State. I'm Mark Bayshore. We're glad you're here this morning. MSU violinist Dmitri Berlinski is on the way. Also, Project Hope today. Project Hope connects Lansing area deer hunters and their venison with the hungry. And we will find out more about that. To start out Current State today, there are a number of ways to find out what the most pressing needs are in a community. Conduct a research study, gather and analyze statistics, or simply ask people what they think the needs are. Well, the latter is exactly what the Church of Greater Lansing did in the Tri-County area in 2012. From January to November of last year, as part of the group's Community Leadership Survey, volunteers interviewed 45 local leaders to get their assessment of the region's needs. They just unveiled the results yesterday, and here to tell us more about the survey is Stephanie Butler, the Executive Director of the Church of Greater Lansing. Welcome to Current State, Stephanie.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Tell us more about the Church of Greater Lansing.
Sure.
Who are you?
That's a great question. We get that a lot. People always ask us, are you a church? You know, you gather for worship on the weekend, and we're not. We're actually a network of churches. So we've had about 120 churches come through in the Tri-County area, so it's a regional movement, not just a localized Lansing movement. And we're a gathering of really Christian churches who are uniting to transform Lansing for Christ. So that means, from our perspective, we serve our city, we love our city, we help the leaders of our city to bring to pass the dreams and hopes that they have for the people and the city dwellers they're in.
Mm-hmm. And what sparked the survey?
That's a great question. We started 4 or 5 years ago with a project called Food Drop. You may have heard of that. We actually partnered with WKAR with our phone bank
right.
at that time. Yeah. Kathy over there helped us out. And we knew that the mayor had come to us and told us hunger and housing were two primary needs that the city had, Verge Bonero. And at that time, we were willing to take on the issue of hunger. So we united and kind of rallied and decided to do a one-day event. And what we realized, even though Dave Carr from the Michigan Food Bank had said, you guys have done in one day what it takes us 2 months to accomplish in regards to feeding over 3,000 families, in my heart of hearts, I was wrestling with it because I knew it was really a drop in the bucket in light of it being an event versus something more systemic and sustainable to transform the city. So we started to think and kind of pray through what it was we were really wanting to do. How could we make a sustainable difference? How could we make a transformative difference in line with our vision and what we were hoping to accomplish? And the reality is we realized we needed more information. So we set out on this journey to interview these 45 leaders who came through recommendations from each one. We said, who else should we be talking to? And they basically referred the next one. That's how this worked. And just let us know, these are people that are already serving our community. These are people from all domains, sectors of society, spheres of influence, and they're doing the work. So we ask the experts.
Hmm. And you asked each interviewee a set of questions.
We did.
Mm-hmm. The third question seems to get at the heart of the survey. It was a four-part question. I'll quickly run through the four parts. From your perspective, what are the three most pressing issues facing our shared community? How would you go about addressing them? Who is already addressing these issues? And what, if any, are the current roadblocks to bring about substantial progress? You released the findings yesterday. What were the top issues facing our community?
That's a great question. The top four were education, employment and job creation, which includes kind of an economic improvement component, the deterioration of the family, local government infrastructure, and healthcare and crime prevention. So those were the top six concerns that we shared. What's very interesting about the survey was those that followed had the exact same percentage of response. So two additional ones on the next level up at the seventh level issue coming in. We had poverty and transportation both at the exact same percentage. And then the following five were all at the same percentage level in answers too, because everybody answered the three questions, right? What are the top three pressing needs? So you're not going to get 100% total here. So we're looking at 300. Racism, volunteerism, neighborhood issues, competition between nonprofits and affordable housing. So I thought that was interesting that they were so well clustered into kind of those eight areas.
Mm-hmm. Was anything on the list a surprise to you?
Honestly, not really. I sat in almost all of the interviews. So to me personally, having worked at the Lansing City Rescue Mission and been very closely engaged with many of the nonprofits, having been the assistant director there, to me personally, they weren't. But I believe to a lot of the pastors and churches that I have the opportunity and privilege to facilitate these meetings for, they were very surprised.
You also asked each person, who else should we sit down and talk with?
Yeah.
To broaden our understanding of the community. What were those responses like?
They were very helpful, actually. I was delightfully surprised to find that people referred us to individuals in philanthropy. They referred us to individuals who were directors of nonprofits. They referred us to state, local, regional, and city leaders. So that, to me, was a surprise, who they recommended I speak with. Even one, a couple local business owners, like Dean Kelly, who's working with Lansing Promise Scholarships, that this isn't their vocation, this is just what they happen to be passionate about, but they're very much engaged in the community and seeing it succeed.
We spend an awful lot of time talking about both education and jobs, and that's how they came out. One and two. Now, underlying all of this is something called the collective impact approach.
That is correct.
Describe what that means.
Collective impact basically is when a group of individuals or investors from varied sectors of society, domains of society, come together and say, not necessarily, I believe what you believe, therefore we can work together, but I care about what you care about, therefore we can work together. So it's saying we have a shared agenda. We have something we all care about that we're interested in working towards. And then the second point is to come to a place where we say, okay, we're willing to use some type of shared measurement system to determine what the capacities of the vested partners is and where they're able and willing to work and serve and put their assets toward this particular issue.
We're talking with Stephanie Butler, who is the executive director of the Church of Greater Lansing, about their community survey, the results of which were just announced yesterday. They were trying to get at what are the most pressing problems and issues facing the greater Lansing area. Now, as far as conclusions and the way forward, Stephanie, in the report, you were not shy when mentioning obstacles. It says there's an undercurrent of caution and mistrust. That's a quote.
Yes.
And then it mentions racial tension. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Sure. And I would just say that we did this in partnership with the Power We Consortium, and what was most exciting to us about these results is that our top six, all of them aligned with the Power We Consortium's goals, and racism and equity. Equity and racial healing was one of their goals as well. And it seems that in our area, especially because we are the capital, Lansing is the capital city for a state and local government, obviously, there is kind of that undertone of our political climate that we're experiencing right now, a little bit of mistrust. But what I was most excited about at the meeting yesterday is the transparency and authenticity that happened in the room when we did the dialogues around each of the issues. People openly shared some of their concerns and their struggles about needing to remain faithful to their individual mandates or vision of their organization and callings, if it was a church, and yet desiring and recognizing that there is a need to work together and it's time. So while that historically kind of has been an undertone, it seems that now there is an openness and a desire and a recognition that we really can't do this alone. No one organization, individual, or agency can change the city.
Mm. I imagine it must have, some of the people you interviewed must have felt good answering these questions. They were able to get things out of their system.
Yeah.
They were. Did that come through in this experience?
Most definitely. And I would say that was the privilege of being in almost all of the interviews, was hearing the heart of the people that are currently in the multiple areas, those spheres and those sectors. We have some beautiful leaders, some passionate people that very deeply care about our city and the people in our city. And for me, that's exciting, because when you put people like that in a room and you say, What are the solutions? What can we do to fix this? Those are the type of people you want around your table.
Mm-hmm. What kind of comments did you specifically hear repeated? I mean, was there a real common thread to any one of these topics? I mean, was there a common thread to the comments about education
sure.
or about
yeah.
jobs?
Yeah, most definitely. In regards to the education, a lot of the interviewees responded about the issues with K through 3. The third grade reading level, obviously, literacy, the statistics there, what the data shows. Some of the individuals discussed data sharing, which I'll mention this very quickly. I don't know if you're familiar with Meet the Need. Meet the Need is a free integrative software that can be utilized by any organizations and actually tied into their website, so they own it, they can personalize it, looks like theirs. This is one of the ways we're going to begin to utilize a shared measurement system in that collective impact format. And we heard a lot about this issue of data. The smaller nonprofits especially are having a hard time keeping up. They need volunteers, they need resources, they need donations, etc. And the reality is oftentimes these small nonprofits especially don't have the staff basing to be recruiting and managing and following up with these volunteers and these types of things. So this particular software is going to be extremely helpful to them. And it was donated free by some Christians out of Miami, Florida. It's been piloted for about 10 years and it's integratable with the individual websites. It does charity the same things that charity tracking does. So they were very excited to hear about that potential, and that's one of our first things that we rolled out this past week.
I spent some time with your report here before this segment here. Where can people access the findings of your report?
That's a great question. They can contact our office and email us at exec.dir@icoggle.com.
Okay. Exec, E-X-E?
E-X-E-C dot D-I-R. At icogl.com.
Okay, very good. And talk to us about the power of we. I mean, mm-hmm. I know what the power of
yeah,
we consortium
yeah.
is to here, but they're obviously, you referred to their objectives.
Yes.
And
yes.
yours. Just remind our listeners who the power sure. of we is.
The power of we is kind of the network of networks from the community perspective, and Coggle is sort of the network of networks from the faith-based perspective. So they are sort of our parallel in the community. And Coggle just most recently became a community partner of the power of we. They have a faith-based initiative kind of placeholder on their organizational chart, and yet no one from the faith-based community was at the table. So we've been their partner to step into one of those
okay.
slots there.
And the biggest question of all, I guess,
mm-hmm.
what do we do with all this information? What's next?
That's a great question. The first step, obviously, is dialogue, finding out what are those shared agenda items. So we've sort of determined that. And because so many of our items overlapped with what the power of we in the community is saying, are their priorities as well, that's where we're going to start. And the second step, obviously, is connecting the people, helping these leaders that are already working in these specified areas of passion to connect to one another. What are your strengths? What are your assets? Who are you or are you not working with? Are you duplicating something that already exists? And having those difficult conversations that I think initially cause a little bit of tension, but ultimately what it'll lead to is people being able to work in their sweet spots.
Okay. Stephanie Butler is the Executive Director of the Church of Greater Lansing. We have been discussing the results of the group's community leadership survey that assessed the needs of the Tri-County area. Stephanie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Mark.
MSU violin professor Dmitry Berlinski performs a program of virtuoso violin works this Saturday night, 8 o'clock at MSU's Cook Recital Hall. Berlinski will be backed by the International Chamber Soloists. That's a group he's led since its founding in 2004. The concert will feature an international and multi-century assortment of music from Russia to Argentina and many stops in between. WKAR's Peter Worf joined Dmitry Berlinski in his College of Music studio last week to discuss the International Chamber Soloists and Saturday's program, which includes Antonio Vivaldi's evocative Winter Concerto from the Four Seasons.
you know, the teeth are chattering and people are trying just to get warmer. And in the first moment, and there's a bitter cold wind, which it really makes you feel the bitterness of that cold winter. And in the second moment, you're supposed to hear through the pizzicato that it's melting snow, so those drops and beautiful melody appears. But the reason I put Vivaldi, not just for its own sake, but the next piece by Astor Piazzolla actually was written because of the Vivaldi seasons. And Piazzolla wrote four seasons. We're going to play one of the seasons. Piazzolla really used some of the elements, musical elements of Vivaldi, but brought it to the very different part of the world in South America, when it's very exotic and you can hear different sounds and you can hear insects and rainforest sounds in his music. So it has a completely different flavor. At the same time, at the end of the piece and throughout the piece, you can hear some of the Vivaldi elements. So he uses just exact a couple of measure of Vivaldi themes, but it makes it just complete. Different sense of the music and the rhythm. He used this the Latin American rhythm, which makes this music that you want to jump and start dancing.
After intermission, you take us to this idea again of combining old and new. And in this case, we hear music that has, again, that sort of Baroque style, combining with a well-known 20th century composer who wrote a lot of music that is nothing like his suite in the old style.
Absolutely. I think it's one of the most conservative piece of music for him, because Alfred Schnittke was very well known for lots of dissonance and I think he was incredibly talented and important composer of 20th century. And actually I happened to know him a little bit. I was always fascinated by his music. But Suite in Old Style, you almost forget that it was written in 20th century. Couple of moments when he reminds us that he's not a Baroque composer, and he really makes a couple of harmonies. It sounds almost like a mistake if you hear first time, but he insists and he sustains some of the chords. And even if you get comfortable in the Baroque harmonies, and suddenly it's very disturbing, reminding that we're in a different century. And I think it's a great idea trying to create that travel through time, because it's a modern composer writes about in the old style and represents different moments beautifully, bringing some of the flavor of the Baroque music, but in a different setting.
When did you first decide that you wanted to bring an orchestra together to perform, and what was it that made you want to do this?
You know, when I was growing in back in the Soviet time, in the former Soviet Union, there were a couple of really, really good chamber orchestra, and I was always enjoying listening, and I went to all those concerts, and I always had that dream that one day, when I have a chance, when I have an opportunity, I might also be able to do something like this. And when I came to MSU, I thought it's a great place to try to start something. And I've been performing a lot internationally, and I was invited once to the festival in Costa Rica, and I played there with the orchestra from Scandinavia. And last minute, they came without the conductor. So basically, I had to work with this orchestra and prepare them for the concert. And the director of the festival was so pleased to see the results. So he said, next time, if you would like to come back, you can bring your own group of musicians. And I liked that idea, and it didn't happen right away. But a few years later, I thought it's a wonderful opportunity for me to get the MSU students. And it was such exciting trip. So we spent 2 weeks in Costa Rica and in Mexico. So it was, I think it was in 2005, in the summer of 2005. And of course, students come and go. So for me, it's always a challenge to keep the group together. Some people are very new, some are more experienced. But I think it's a very exciting project. And we had amazing tours in the past. We went 2 years ago, we went on a tour of travel through the Midwest, Colorado and Wisconsin, Dakota. We had some concerts in New York, in Washington, in California. So we started traveling more and more, and I think it's very exciting for me and for the students to have a real professional experience, also to get paid professionally. And as a group, I think it's really makes us feel as we are sharing something important together on the stage.
You said you bring to the orchestra sometimes musicians from New York and Cincinnati, Detroit, and other places, and then combining with some of these MSU string students, that must be incredibly rewarding and fun to see as a teacher, this mingling of the younger players and the more experienced players. Passing down their knowledge to the students.
Absolutely. That was one of my intentions, because I wanted them to learn from some very professional orchestra player, because I'm not an orchestra player. So when they play with somebody who has experience of 15 years in New York Philharmonic, they learn in a second some very important tools that they won't be able to learn practicing their own excerpts or something. So it's a very crucial experience for them.
Dmitri Berlinski is professor of violin at Michigan State University's College of Music. He performs with the International Chamber Soloists, his chamber orchestra, on Saturday, November 16th at 8 p.m. at Cook Recital Hall at MSU. Dmitri, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
For Current State, this is Peter Worf.
It's Current State here on 90.5 WKAR. A quick thank you to Current State listeners who joined us last night at Schuler Books in Okemos. We heard many good story ideas for our show, and we got a lot of valuable input, really fun. And remember, if last night was not convenient for you, you are invited to Schuler Books Eastwood Town Center next Tuesday evening, starting at 6 o'clock for a similar session. We just want to know what's on your mind with regard to the community and what role we might play in getting issues out that are important to you. So Schuler Books, Eastwood Town Center, next Tuesday evening, starting at 6. We hope you can join us, and we're going to continue these encounters here throughout the greater Lansing area into the months ahead. So be aware of that as well. The East Lansing City Council picked up two new members last week. Susan Woods and Ruth Beyer were elected to 4-year terms, and Kathleen Boyle will stay on the council after winning the right to serve the balance of the term to which she was appointed last year. Now, a swearing-in ceremony, originally scheduled for last night, is now scheduled for next Wednesday. The ceremony was delayed because of the election results have not yet been certified. Nonetheless, Susan Woods and Kathleen Boyle join us this morning here on Current State to talk about what lies ahead for the East Lansing City Council. Susan, good morning.
Good morning.
And Kathleen Boyle, welcome to Current State.
Good morning.
I'll point out at the top, we also invited Ruth Beyer, the other newcomer, to join us this morning. She was unable to be here. Before last week's election, outgoing council member Kevin Baird had this to say about incoming East Lansing City Council members.
The hours are long. The pay is small, and your hands are tied most of the time.
So on that optimistic note, Kathleen Boyle, why did you want to run to fill out this term?
Well, call me the infernal optimist, but I do think that City Council can make a difference in East Lansing. And I know Susan and I have both lived here a long time, and so has Ruth, and we love East Lansing and want to do our best by it.
Susan, what about you? What motivated you to run in the first place?
Well, first of all, a lot of different people kept asking me, and I thought, well, okay, I will, consider that. But I think right now, I think East Lansing is on the verge of changing. I find that living in the Bailey District neighborhood, all of the houses have been selling. Young families are coming in. My husband is a professor at MSU and the chair of the telecom department, and all of his faculty is young. You know, there are very few of the older ones, and so I think that, you know, the town is becoming much more dynamic and younger, and I would like to be a part of making sure that, it keeps going in that path.
Kathleen, are you finding the same thing? Do you feel East Lansing is changing in the dramatic way that Susan seems to be suggesting here?
Well, I certainly think we have a great potential for change in East Lansing. We have a brand new, well, a year old now, art museum that's hopefully going to be a draw across the world and certainly across the country and the region. We have a big influx of international students to Michigan State University, and that has an impact on the city. And I think we're looking to move in new directions downtown and elsewhere in the city.
One of our most common pre-election questions here to candidates running for office was, what one problem facing the city would you most like to solve? So I'll ask both of you the same question. Susan, what challenge facing East Lansing would you most like to help solve?
Probably development of downtown. I think that the Park District is an enormous challenge to make sure that it is done well. New development of apartment buildings that, you know, have been proposed, and encouraging new business to come downtown. That I think will be the biggest challenge.
How confident are you about addressing that challenge? Do you think downtown is going to be revitalized here?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think everyone I spoke to during the campaign and everybody at City Hall that I've spoken to, this is their first priority.
Kathleen?
So, yeah, I think we all want that to happen.
Kathleen, what about you? What single problem would you most like to help solve that faces East Lansing?
Well, I don't know if I would call this a problem, but the challenge that I see, and certainly the Park District is important, the budget challenges are important, but the Primetime Seniors and the Tri-County Commission on Aging did a survey of seniors in the East Lansing area about their future anticipated housing needs. And we see there a big call for people who are interested in finding housing that's different than the single-family residence where they have to mow the lawn and shovel the snow. So I think that's a challenge that East Lansing has. In a 1974 interview that I heard on WKAR of Mary P. Sharp, the first woman who served as an East Lansing City Council member, she identified as one of the challenges we need to address the need for senior housing in close proximity to campus. So I think she pointed it out. We're 30-some years down the pike. Nothing has been done. The results of the survey underscore the desire for that, and I think it's time for the city developers to address that issue and possibly develop some housing that's particularly targeted at active seniors, retirees, people who are maybe alumni of the Michigan State University and want to return here to live in their retirement.
Do other council members, do many citizens share that priority?
Well, I certainly think there are many citizens who share the priority. One of the first things I heard after being appointed to council last September in 2012 was a number of people in primetime seniors, upon meeting me, said, you know, what the city really needs is some housing for seniors who are ready to leave their single-family homes and want to live in East Lansing and be close to the university. Certainly there's housing available further north on the northern borders of East Lansing, but I think the need is for hopefully walkable community that's in close proximity to Michigan State University.
Kathleen, why don't you also weigh in briefly on the Park District project and what the prospects are for that?
Well, I certainly hope we're going to come up with a project dealing with DTN that will be a great addition to our downtown and that will address the need to replace those decaying buildings that are there now. DTN's put a lot of work into a series of charrettes for community input. I know they're determined to come up with a quality product. They've been in this community for many years, and I think they can do a good job. So I'm very hopeful that we come up with something that will be a great bonus to the downtown East Lansing area.
We're talking with two of the three new East Lansing City Council members, Susan Woods and Kathleen Boyle, here on Current State. There's been a lot of discussion lately of transportation issues along the Michigan Avenue, Grand River Avenue corridor. Those talks include improved bus service from the Capitol Building in Lansing through East Lansing and onto the Meridian Mall in Okemos. Susan Woods, can that be made to work? Where do you stand on that?
You know, I was part of the community economic development through the arts with the Lansing Arts Council, and I think that that MSU and CATA and, you know, the Arts Council and many different groups are working very hard to create the avenue. And that would be from, you know, Capitol, from the Capitol Building all the way, you know, down Michigan Avenue to Grand River and continue on to Williamston, and that they are trying to provide, you know, bike lanes and transportation, and the vision is pretty wonderful. I think yes, I think it will happen. There are a lot of people working very hard to create it.
Kathleen, is that important to you, and what's your take on that?
Well, certainly it's important. I think the demographics show us that people are getting cars later, getting driver's licenses later, and that means that for working young people, they need other forms of transportation. And in the Lansing, East Lansing area, that comes down to either carpooling with someone else who has a car, or you're riding the bus and possibly occasionally bicycling, although I can't believe anyone bicycles 12 months out of the year. And in order to make that work, if you want to live in East Lansing and work in downtown Lansing, we have to have dependable, relatively frequent bus service. I think that's very important. It's important to Lansing, and it's important to East Lansing.
It may be important as well with regard to your seniors argument a minute ago. Not just for young people because they're getting cars later, but because if you want East Lansing to be the kind of community that appeals to seniors, public transportation is obviously going to be important there too.
Absolutely. That's a very good point. And actually, there's been a series on commuting on Morning Edition that points out the importance of the alternate forms of getting to and from work and shopping beyond just getting in your car and driving there. So public transportation is an important part of that, and improved bicycling ability throughout East Lansing is another issue that we've been struggling to address over the past few years, and we need to continue to work on, because there are still there are areas in the city where it's very, very difficult to maneuver by bicycle because of the narrow roads and the amount of traffic, vehicular traffic on those roads.
Kathleen, that's two references to WKAR programming in your answers so far. We greatly appreciate that. And Susan, if you could kind of bring up your end, we'd really appreciate that, too.
Okay. WKAR, WKAR. I mean,
East Lansing and Lansing have shared a fire chief for a while, maybe the most notable example of regionalism in our area. And 9/11 service has become regionalized as well. Are there other opportunities along those lines, Susan Woods, that you think should be explored with East Lansing's neighbors?
You know, I'm not really, I haven't really given that much thought. I'm sure that Kathleen has a better take on that, having been with the council for 2 years.
Kathleen, any comments on regionalism?
Well, I think regionalism can be very beneficial to communities. Certainly, the sharing of Chief Telefaro has worked very well for both the city of Lansing and the city of East Lansing. And beyond that sharing, we do have community support agreements for fire and police for all the surrounding communities. In addition, our water and sewage is done regionally with Meridian Township. So we're no stranger to regional cooperation. That said, however, you have to look at each possibility, regional possibility, on a case-by-case basis and see whether or not it will continue to provide the same level of service that we already have for our citizens at a cost that is similar or savings. You don't want to go into a regional project that will end up costing us more and getting us less.
Susan, do you expect to learn more about regionalism here after you're on the job for a while? I mean, this is
Absolutely.
An ongoing topic, yeah.
Yeah, no, it is. And it's a delicate topic. I mean, I think that they looked at, you know, getting the police and the fire and the sewage, but, you know, sharing mayors or something we don't want to do, or you know, East Lansing has always been a autonomous, very unique type of town, being a college town. So, you know, I think, yeah, I mean, that's what we need to do. We need to look at all possibilities, as Kathleen said, you know, to create a stable budget. We have to have a balanced budget in East Lansing. And so this is, you know, these are all the different aspects that the city council can look at, but not take on just for taking on, you know. And I think that with this city council and with the city staff, that would never happen. I mean, I find them that they really do their due diligence.
Kathleen, do you feel that budget cuts have bottomed out?
Well, I certainly hope that the budget cuts have bottomed out, but of course our revenue is controlled by property taxes, and we had
state revenue sharing.
And state revenue sharing, and that was reduced. That has been reduced. So I'm certainly hopeful that continuing lowering resources is going to be behind us. But
what are the projections? Do we know?
I do not know.
Okay.
No, I don't know.
Do you think police and fire services are safe from cuts?
I believe that we have always managed to maintain our public safety services, and we're going to continue to do so.
Susan Woods, you've run the East Lansing Film Festival since it began, and you've expressed a desire to bring more arts events to East Lansing. This year's festival wraps up Thursday night, by the way. Can you give us an example of what sorts of things you're talking about?
Well, I mean, one thing I would love to do is to create a When I founded the East Lansing Film Festival, I also founded the Children's Film Festival, and then they broke off from the East Lansing Film Festival and unfortunately could not survive. So I would like to try to bring that back since we have so many children here. I would also like to see something. The East Lansing Film Festival is the only true town and gown. All the other festivals occur during the summer. The Jazz Festival does involve MSU a lot, but now that we have the Broad Museum, I would like to see more, you know, maybe creating something with them and having something else in the spring. I was hoping to do an environmental film festival also. So, but, you know, it's there are so many possibilities and ideas, and it just takes, you know, to see what the desire is and the feasibility. So, but okay. Yes, I think arts is very important to this town.
We just got a few seconds left. Kathleen Boyle, where are you on determining a new mayor?
Well, there'll be a vote on the new mayor at the meeting that's going to be held Wednesday, November 20th. First, the new members get sworn in, and I get sworn in as a continuing member, and then there'll be an election of mayor and mayor pro tem.
Kathleen Boyle and Susan Woods from the East Lansing City Council, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
It's Wednesday and time for Current State's Neighbors in Action segment, where we feature people and organizations working to make our community a better place. With this Friday being the opening of the firearm deer hunting season in Michigan, it's only appropriate that we feature Help Other People Eat, or HOPE, which distributes excess venison donated by deer hunters to those in need. And here to tell us more about HOPE is its founder, Tom Cullimore. And joining him is Mark Chris, director of the City Rescue Mission in Lansing, which puts the venison to good use. Welcome to Current State, guys.
Good morning.
Good to see you, Tom Cullimore. How did this idea get started?
Well, it started in 05. I knew there was a tremendous need then to help feed the hungry. And the biggest portion of any food bank's budget is meat. It costs so much money. So that's why I decided to start this program, and I could deliver their meat totally free, cost them nothing. Mm-hmm. And over the years since I started, we're now sitting at 210,820 meals since I started it. Next year, I hope to break the 250,000 mark.
Very impressive. Did you have a hard time getting hunters involved, or I mean, was it basically a hit from the start, or
it? You know, I wondered when I first started how it all would work out, how many people even like venison. Now I found out even in the little community food banks, the people come in and ask for it now that they've had it all these years. If there's beef in the freezer and venison in the freezer, the people tell me they'll take venison over beef now that they've learned how great it is, and you don't have all the fat you do in beef.
Mm. What do hunters have to do here to
get involved? The only thing they have to do, I have got several processors in mid-Michigan, and on the back of my business cards, they're all listed. They just take a deer in there, and all they have to say is, this is for HOPE. And then when the processor gets a few, they call me, and I go pay for them, pick them up, and take them to all the wonderful places like the Mission.
You've mentioned that you managed to get it to where it needs the venison. You get it where it needs to be at very low cost. How do you pull that off? There sounds like there's a lot of transportation involved with 210,000 meals.
Well, served. There is. I donate my vehicle. I pay for all the fuel, and I pay for everything, the signs, the business cards, everything. So every penny somebody donates to HOPE goes directly to help feed the hungry.
Mark, Chris, how did you find out about HOPE?
Well, Tom came to our door, and he can use some venison, and absolutely we can use some venison. And, you know, this time of year, we appreciate the turkeys, but I tell you, if it wasn't for Tom, we'd only have turkeys. And so it's good that we get to have this venison. And our head cook is a nutritionist, and she loves the idea of venison because there's less fat and it's more nutritious. And literally, Tom brings a couple tons every single year to allow us to feed the hungry.
For people who haven't had venison, what is it like?
Delicious.
Okay.
Fat-free, all natural. It just makes a fantastic meal of any kind that you want to make, chili or sloppy joes or tacos or anything like
similar
that.
Similar to steak, though, or similar to what? I mean, what would you compare it to?
heaven.
It's definitely lean beef, and so things like sloppy joes, things like chili, utilize like you would beef as far as our kitchen is concerned. Plus, there's less waste, there's less loss in production, and it's more nutritious.
Tell us about the City Rescue Mission, Mark. How many people do you serve? What services do you offer?
Well, we provide shelter. We're the largest shelter in Michigan's capital area. And we shelter about 150, 160 people a night. Last night we had over 100 women and kids at Maplewood Center on South Cedar Street. We also provide lots of meals. We'll provide over 100,000 meals a year.
Wow. How much venison have you received then from Project
Hope? About 2 tons this year. So over a ton every single year. So about 2 tons this year.
And will that go up on starting on Friday?
Will it ever.
As a matter of fact, this afternoon, Tom personally will be delivering more venison this afternoon, as a matter of fact.
What was the reaction of your guests to the venison?
Well, I think once they get over the idea, I think what happens, people don't know what venison is, really. They don't know the quality of venison and the meal. And so we provide a meal. We provide an entree, a vegetable, a dessert, a salad bar. But the entree is always a good meal. And so I think they realize the quality of the beef that comes in our meal is phenomenal, and they appreciate it.
How many meals do you serve a year?
Over 100,000 meals a year.
Okay. And have you seen this number go up or down the last few years?
When Tom started with us, I think we had about 30,000 meals probably 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've tripled our capacity. And so every year for the past probably 3 years, we've been providing over 100,000 meals a year.
What are your particular needs at the City Rescue Mission?
Well, we don't budget any food. And so it comes in the door, like Tom, bringing in the door with the hunters that care about the community and those that need help. And so all of ours is donated. And so we always have a constant need for food. So whether it be groceries or vegetables, whether it be a check designated for food that might go towards purchasing other items like fresh salad items, whatever happens to be, God puts on people's heart to bring and meet our needs every single day.
Tom, do you grind venison as well?
Yes, it all comes in ground packages because that's the easiest way to cook it and serve it in various kinds of meals. If you had steaks and so forth like that and somebody did not know how to cook wild game, they would ruin it and then it would not be good for anything. They wouldn't like the taste, or it gets very, very tough when you overcook wild game. So I have everything ground and I get more out of it that way. The animal is totally deboned, so I get every ounce of meat that we can get out of it.
And how did you get the processors on board? Was that hard?
It was, because there was a time when they weren't getting properly paid. And when I started Hope in 05, I went to every one of them, got them back online with me, and told them, when I walk in the door, you're going to get cash. I would know if there was 10 deer, I'd take X amount of $50 bills and count them out to them right there. But recently, I do write them a check instead of carrying that much cash around, because Hope has grown so much. And, and that's one of the biggest things I have to do is constantly find money.
has the act of deer hunting changed for you since 05? I mean, is it more an act of charity, of mercy? I mean, it sounds like the experience of hunting may have changed for you as well.
Well, it has, because I live on a farm and I'm pretty abundant with deer, and I get usually at least 3 a year that I donate myself to Hope. I take them, right there, and like any other hunter, I just got to tell them this is for Hope.
Mark, Chris, where does your funding come from?
All donations. Our budget each year is about $1.5 million. And 90% come from individual people and families, probably 10% from churches and organizations. But the vast majority are the people who listen to your radio station, just the average person that wants to help others. They give to their City Rescue Mission. And we, again, are the largest shelter in mid-Michigan. We've quadrupled over the past probably 5 years as far as the number of people that we house, that we shelter every single night. And the community is a very giving community. And so it's individual people and families that support the ministry.
Tom, remind us again, what role do monetary contributions play on your end with Hope?
Well, on my end with Hope, I have to have these contributions to pay for all the processing, and I've so far been very, very fortunate. My pal John Schneider writes about it now and then, and whenever he does, we get a decent input of money to help Hope keep going.
Are there opportunities for volunteers to get involved with the City Rescue
Absolutely.
Mission?
Go to our website, bearescuer.com, and there's a tab there for volunteering. volunteering to watch kids at night. We have the chapel service in the evening, so we get a chance to play with 30, 40 kids. That's a lot of fun. Busyness, for sure. Serving a meal on Michigan Avenue for our men's shelter or the women's and children's shelter on South Cedar Street. So serving meals as well as watching the kids. Sometimes they have different activities as well throughout the organization, the ministry. So I would call 517-485-0145 or go to bearescuer.com. And sign up to volunteer.
Tom, do you spend much time recruiting new hunters to Hope?
You know, I just don't have to. The hunters of Mid-Michigan are so marvelous, and so's all the processors that I use in the area. And I have signage within each processor that this is a Hope station, and then that allows them just to read the sign that tells there's no cost to you, Mr. Hunter or Mrs. Hunter. And, you know, then Hope will come and pay for it and deliver it to the proper places.
Do you need volunteers besides hunters that could help you out?
No, I'm an old-fashioned rascal, and I just do it all myself. I pick it up. I never have the meat longer than an hour. It's in a food bank somewhere or a soup kitchen like the city mission.
Now, can you tell, you say you live on a farm, can you tell what kind of deer harvest we're going to have starting, firearms deer harvest we're going to have starting Friday just from... Do you bow hunt as
yes,
well? You do?
Yes.
Okay, so you've been out there already.
I have, but I've been so busy with Hope that I don't bow hunt as much as I used to, but I will go hunting, you know, this through the gun season.
Well, just through observation, can you tell what kind of deer harvest there's going to be starting Friday?
Well, I know the archery season this year has been very good to me. I've gotten more deer from more processors than I could expect, so that part has been good.
Tom Cullimore is the founder of Hope, Helping Other People Eat, which distributes venison from hunters to those in need. And Mark Chris is in charge of Lansing's City Rescue Mission. Thanks to both of you, and good luck. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Current State could always use more nominations, and we know there are great people and organizations out there doing great work. We just don't know about them, so let us know. Please help us out. Send us an email about these great nonprofits in the area to currentstate@wkar.org. Put Neighbors in Action in the subject line and tell us why you think they should be featured for the great work that they do. That's our show for today. Coming up Thursday on Current State, we discuss the Pure Michigan Waste campaign, which seeks to eliminate inefficiencies in government services. Also, we'll have live Turkish classical music throughout the show on Thursday. Our executive producer is Peter Worf. Joel Lindstroth is the producer. Thanks also to producers Kevin Lavery, Melissa Benmark, Emmanuel Berry, and Scott Pohl, as well as Aaron Young for engineering and Gabriella Saldivia for production assistance. I'm Mark Bayshore. Thanks for listening. It's been Current State on WKAR.